break it down, down like this.
Yo, what's up everyone? Welcome along to another episode of Tempo Fit's Workout of the Week. My name is Hayden Sherman and we are at the end of Massive March as we all dive into what we have now discovered, this thing called lockdown, COVID-19, social distancing. They're all words that we never ever used before and now they make up so much of our existence. So I hope you all are healthy, your family and friends are all healthy and you're managing to stay sane in these crazy, crazy times. It is absolutely nuts. And like I said last week, I'm so grateful to have running as a tool to stay fresh, stay fit, freshen up the mind. And this week is the last episode of Massive March where we are doing marathon style workouts. Now, I want to put a big disclaimer in front of this one. We do need to be careful in this time of lockdown. We're in lockdown in New Zealand. You can go out for walks and runs, but you are recommended not to do anything crazy. So make this sort of a medium to long run and try to not make this like the epic session. Just be really sensible around this and maybe even do a couple of laps of your neighborhood so you're within Kui, within a short jog of home so you don't get into trouble. Okay. This week on the show, we have none other than Malcolm Hicks. He's the number 4 marathoner from New Zealand of all time. He just recently ran a 2:10.04 for the marathon. 2:10.04. And he qualified for the Tokyo Olympics, which has now been postponed to next year. Hopefully that means he can still run in 2021. But without further ado, handing over to Malcolm Hicks. All right, so we are stoked to have online, all the way from London, Malcolm Hicks. Welcome to the show, and how's life in London for you?
Thanks, Hayden. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, London life is probably similar to what most of the Kiwis will be experiencing. Well, as of now, we've been in lockdown with Corona and for over a week now, and working from home for a little bit longer. So yeah, it's the new realities and we're all getting used to it. So the Kiwis will be finding out the same things experiencing the same realities that we have. We're only about a week ahead here, so not too far. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, it's just craziness worldwide. And so I'm assuming you're still able to get out onto the towpaths and parks and go running, or you're stuck inside?
Thankfully, we are allowed to exercise, specifically one form of exercise a day, which I'm only running. So, it's great. They haven't closed the parks yet. I'm holding my breath on that one because I fear it may happen at some stage. But they're still encouraging people to get out and get some exercise, for physical and mental health. They've foreseen what it's like having a whole population cooped up inside. So they're encouraging people to get out. I can go a long way up the River Lee and a few other canals and get pretty isolated, which is good. So just a lot of solo running at the moment.
Yeah, totally. Now, before we divert off in all sorts of directions, let's talk about the workout. So what are we going through today? We're still in, well, this is the final week of Massive March that we're doing, so marathon style workout. So what's your marathon style workout that we're going to do?
So one of my favorite, usually on a Sunday for me, one of my favorite marathon workouts is a long run with some marathon simulation at the end of it. So the workout I've chosen is 2x5K at the end of your long run. And the 2x5K is at marathon pace. And the long run is essentially however long you're up to with your, in your marathon plan. If your long run looks like 20K, 25, 30 or more, the idea is to tack this on at the end of that. So the idea is that you're running at marathon pace on tired legs, which is just simulating what it's like late in the stages of a marathon.
Nice. And how much jog would we be doing between the two?
I would give about 3 minutes between the two and just keep moving. The idea is that it's a long continuous workout. So you want to keep moving, and it just gives yourself a break in between the two 5K efforts. One of the key things with the session is you can use it to simulate your race day. So, and one of those things is your fueling. And so your fluids and your gels and whatever you're taking on race day, the idea is that you can practice with that. Between those two bikes.
And practice at race pace, is that sort of the idea?
Yes. Yep. So, you can either take your fluids or your gels between the two 5Ks, or you can do it on the run. Taking drinking and chewing through a gel at race pace can be quite different to a cruisy Sunday long run jog pace. So that's a really difficult thing, and trying to drink out of a paper cup and things like that is actually quite difficult. So that's one good thing to practice.
Absolutely. Do you have any tricks that you'd want to give people? Because it's such an art, eh? Like, first time I entered a marathon, I was like, whoa, this is actually really hard to drink out of this cup. Like, you've got electrolyte all over your face and you're choking, get the stitch.
Yeah, you end up with a very sticky face and fingers and, electrolyte, whatever it is, juice everywhere. Most people will fold the top of the cup and then try and drink it that way. It just channels a little bit more
in the top, make a spout.
That's right. Yep. And you'll hopefully end up with a bit more and taking a bit more than you would otherwise.
Do you slow down at all, or do you just try and keep that same rhythm going?
I try and keep the same rhythm. Fortunately, we often get bottles on the course. We get to kind of run through, and we have to swipe a bottle off a table, which is marginal success most of the time. but if you get most of your bottles, you're doing pretty well. So it kind of depends how busy the group is you're running with. Sometimes you literally just can't get to the table. We try and run through with the bottle, but I think one key thing is to not rush it. So don't try and drink it all at once. You can jog along with it for a second, or hold the bottle in your hand for, if they're giving out bottles, you can hold that for, half a kilometer or so, and just sip at it slowly. But with the cups, I think the only way is pinch the top and hope for the best.
And it's interesting with the hydration nutrition thing, because for those who don't know, Malcolm's just done a 2:10 marathon, which is what, fourth in New Zealand all time now? 2:10.05, was it?
That's right, 2:10.05. Yeah.
So number four all time. But for you, like, the hydration and nutrition is quite different to someone doing like a 4 hour, maybe 5 hour marathon. So I always encourage people, if you're well over that 3 hour mark, like, you're not trying to just dip under 3 hours or get that Boston qualifier, like, take the walk breaks to get your fluids and nutrition in, because, 10, 15 seconds extra isn't going to take much, but it will get you to the end of the finish line if you can make sure you keep that hydration and nutrition up enough. Have you got any thoughts around that?
No, absolutely. It's so important, especially being out there for a long time. It keeps you going, and you've got to make sure you get it in, and you're kind of tracking that and making sure your fluids and carbohydrates and the fuel you're taking is, nicely evenly spaced. So don't kind of, go through the first hour or so thinking, oh, I'm feeling great. Start getting it in slowly and bit by bit, and just keep it consistent throughout.
Now, I saw you were doing, before Doha, the World Champs last year, you were doing some kind of testing out in, where were you? Some place in the Mediterranean that looked amazing.
It was Malta, a lovely location. We were in Cyprus.
Cyprus, that's
So near Malta. But no, we had a we had two training camps out there. So the first time we went out, we had a really good team from Athletics New Zealand and High Performance Sport New Zealand. We had some nutritionists and physiologists come out, and they were helping us, you know, with those nutrition and hydration aspects, which preparing for the marathon in Doha were really important. There was the added bonus of it being a midnight marathon. So that kind of, you know, throws your whole body clock and eating schedule before a marathon out the window. We did a lot of testing, you know, looking at fluid loss and sodium loss and, kind of, you know, rebuilding our whole nutrition program for a very unique race. So, we learned. A lot, you know. There was we were going out for, you know, 2 hour plus runs, and you know, having 5 liters of fluid loss during those runs. So you know, that's a very, you know, it was good to have the professionals around when we were in that environment, and they were, you know, monitoring us, and because a lot of heat stress is perceptual. So you know, it's key indicators like dizziness and losing your train of thought and headaches and things like that, but they all come on very slowly and piece by piece. So you know, you have to monitor them quite closely to make sure that, you know, you're not reaching any dangerous points. But because we were preparing to, you know, run at the World Championships in horrific conditions in Doha, we kind of had to test those limits a bit. I was very thankful to have that team out there with us, and we learned a lot.
Cool. Yeah, and I guess that's probably a wise point to mention as well. As people are in isolation, like, we actually do need to be that extra bit careful when we're going out and doing these longer sessions, that you do take your fluids with you if you are going to do this, and just not put yourself at risk. And then also the emergency people who have to come and rescue you, because that just that's adds to an already tricky situation.
Absolutely. Not the time to be overloading the healthcare service.
Yeah, definitely. And then you're like, well, blame it on workout of the week for giving me this idea of doing this workout.
A good way is to do it close to home and do laps, and then you can pick up a drink or fuel, which is what I quite often do.
Put it in the letterbox or something.
Yeah,
hide it in the bush.
Exactly. So that's one trick I use quite a lot, just to make sure you get it regularly. But you know, you're not stuck 15Ks from home if things don't go the way you planned.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So I'm really keen to dig into both Seville, where you ran 2:10, and Doha, and also your plans for the future after the show. But let's get back to the workout itself. So you mentioned this is a good chance for that practicing that nutrition, which is, I think, a really good factor. And also you mentioned that time on your feet, really learning to run at race pace when you're tired. Do you want to explain a little bit about that and why we would do it, and maybe some of the tricks to look out for?
Absolutely. So I guess the why is just, you know, we're constantly building in a marathon build up, you know, all the pieces of the puzzle. So you're working on your strength and you're working on your speed, and then you're kind of adding all of the nutrition and the other variables that you're trying to plan for. This one is, you know, we can do lots of faster workouts, you know, maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes. And then you can do lots of long running. But I guess this workout is probably targeted a bit more in the maybe 4 to 6 weeks before the race zone. So when you've got some long runs under your belt and you're kind of, you're up to a good, you know, 2 hours, maybe, or 90 minutes. And then you can start adding on top of that. It's taking a bit of the speed that you've been building and then throwing that at the end of a long run. A key strength session. Cool. So it's just part of the simulation. Obviously, there's so much that needs to come together on the day, and you know, your breakfast and the timing and nutrition and your shoes and your gear and all of those things. So these longer sessions are a really good chance to practice all of that. It's just trying to control all of the variables that come up on race day. And the more you've practiced and the more you've prepared for them, the more ready you are to go.
Exactly. Awesome. Now, do you have any like tricks that you have or things that you say to yourself at the end of a marathon? Like it's a pretty dark, lonely place in that last 10K. What do you say to yourself, and do you practice those sorts of things in a workout like this to make sure that your mindset's in the right place?
I think I just approach the race as in stages. Yep. So, you know, the first half, you should be trying to stay as relaxed as possible, and you're just getting to halfway and you're ticking off halfway. And then the next stage for me is 30K. And then, when you're at 30K, then things really ramp up, and that's when you really need to focus, because, you know, after 30K is kind of a zone you don't really get into in training much, you know, at your race pace and at that distance. That's when you really need to start focus. But then, you know, once you get to 30K, you're not far away from getting down into single digits, and you can start counting down those Ks. So those are kind of the three stages that I approach the race in. First stage is literally just ticking it off and sticking to the plan. Not getting carried away with the pace and making sure you're getting all of, you know, the nutrition and the fluids in early, because that's what's going to help you get through the second half. Those are the three blocks that I approach it in.
Very cool. Oh, makes sense. So because this is a sort of extended podcast, because we're running the first half all entirely as a warm-up, and then we'll leave people to do the second half of their long run, let's dive into your background. And so obviously you're from New Zealand, you're over in London at the moment, but when did running become a thing for you? When did this crazy habit start?
I've been at it for a little while. It was probably third form, what's that, year nine, at high school, that I a friend, Andrew Haig, which few people might ring a bell, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you should come run for our school team. You know, we go away to the New Zealand cross country, and my club, which you used to run for, Hayden Wesley, in
nice,
Auckland.
Nice.
And it was just more of a, you know, it was a social time with the guys, and we were all relatively good at it and fit, and we enjoyed it. So, you know, you just kind of naturally migrate towards the things that you're good at, because you see success and you see progress. So it just started from there, really. And I still played other sports, soccer and tennis, kind of up till about year 12, 13. But I guess once I left school, running was the main focus. There was definitely a few years with up and down with injuries and a couple of surgeries and a couple of stress fractures in there, unfortunately. The last few years have been really good and consistent, and I think that's what's paid dividends, you know, transitioning into the marathon the last year or two.
I remember doing some training with you in Auckland, running laps of Auckland Domain, and if there's anything I could say about the way that you approach it, is definitely that consistency. It seems like you've got a good way of approaching it, just logging workout after workout, and not sort of putting too much emphasis in any one workout, but a disaccumulation over time. Is that sort of how you approach it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, people have probably heard this before, you know, there's no shortcuts when it comes to running. It's just all consistency. And you don't need to do anything different. You know, between say if you're running some half marathons, or you've done one or two marathons, you don't need to kind of step it up to the next race. You just need to stay consistent. So, and you know, naturally you'll see better quality, and you'll naturally progress. But yeah, there's no need to kind of force yourself into making big jumps, because being consistent just and staying healthy is the most important thing. And you know, it's most runners know staying healthy is also one of the hardest things to maintain that consistency. So yeah, it's not getting carried away, not making big jumps in training, just kind of, you know, watching the progression happen, and waiting for it, because yeah, you do have to be patient, because yeah, there are no shortcuts essentially.
Totally. Now, talking about progression, I'm just looking at your marathon progression. It seems like every time you step out to do a marathon, you take a good 3 minutes off, because 2:16 was your debut in Berlin, so that was 2018. And then Dusseldorf, you come and get second place in a 2:13. That was last year, and that got you the qualification for Doha.
Yes, that's right.
So that was the World Champs, and you got 27th at the World Champs, and then took another 3 minutes off it to qualify for the Tokyo Games, which now has been cancelled, but in Seville back in February with that 2:10. So yeah, that's really amazing progression. So let's go back to Doha. I know we sort of touched on it. That crazy heat and running in the middle of the night. What was that like? Like, did you go to bed sort of late afternoon or something, get a nap, or my body clock would just be all sorts of confused.
Yeah. We thought about it a lot, and you know what we would do in terms of the sleep schedule and how we'd approach it, but we kind of just settled on the fact that, you know, let's not try and reverse any sleep schedules. We shifted it a little bit. So, you know, I was trying to sleep in a bit more, but then also we were, you know, and especially in that last kind of week or 10 days, we were doing all our runs in the evening. So, you know, 10, 11 PM, and then, you know, by the time you get home from a run, you have some food and shower and kind of calm down a bit, you know, you're going to bed after midnight. So we just kind of shifted that sleep cycle a little bit forward. But yeah, essentially just trying to nap in the afternoon. And, you know, by the time you get, you know, like any race, doesn't matter if you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to the start line at, say, Auckland Marathon, you know, the adrenaline kicks in and you've had some coffee and you're pretty wide awake. So yeah, it wasn't quite as dramatic as we thought, but I think it's more just the, you know, your body's very used to its normal cycle, and, you know, terms of your eating, and you know, you've got a whole day of eating that you're trying to, you know, digest and process and get to the start line without any GI problems. Totally. So you know, that was also another aspect that we had to do a lot of trial and error, and you know, make sure you go in with a comfortable stomach and empty enough but also filled.
Yeah. Because the benefit of waking up, like most of us, we wake up early in the morning and we down our banana or bagel or something. It's quite easy because you've got a clean slate to work with from a night of sleep, and then you just add in a few carbs and away, or a coffee and away you go. How did that race go, and like, how does it compare? Was it stupidly hard in the heat? Would you say it's your hardest race? I mean, every marathon's hard, especially when you're running 2:10.
they're all hard. It definitely was the hardest race for me. The men's marathon was actually the coolest of all of the marathons and the race walks. So we were really fortunate, you know, all relative. But the women's marathon, they got the worst of it. You know, so they were similar temperatures, so about 30 degrees, but they were in the 90s in terms of humidity. And they
what were
the,
you? Do you remember?
We were down in the, we were more 50, 60, I think, okay. mid-60s-ish. Yeah. So, yeah, and that's a huge difference. So
that's probably a normal summer's day that you might get in Tauranga or Napier or something, where it's hot but it's not super muggy.
So I mean, it's still, I don't, it's hard to compare, because you know, we've compared to similar heat and humidity in other places, but I think you know, it's still the Middle East, and it's a very different heat. So we weren't expecting to have the weather a little bit cooler than we were kind of planning for. So, you know, we had all of the paces we were targeting, et cetera, and what we were prepared for, was much hotter. So we kind of got to about halfway and I realized, I think I was relatively comfortable, and picked up the pace from there. And the leaders, there was a huge pack that went out really fast. And a few of them ended up running very quick. They ran 2:10-ish, I think, which, you know, for a midnight marathon, that is crazy. Yeah. So, but then again, you know, that second half of the race, you know, the sides of the road were starting to get pretty littered with athletes who are struggling in the heat and pulling out, unfortunately. So it was, you know, you had to be prepared for it, but you also had to, you know, be smart about it too. And Caden Shields, the other Kiwi in the race, and I, we were probably sitting in 55th or 60th for the first half of the race. And then we just we slowly made our way through the field. It was a great way to run. You know, you're just pulling people in for the second half of the race.
Amazing.
I struggled with some cramp for about the last 10Ks, which kind of, you know, everyone was struggling with the heater in their own way. And that was the way I struggled with it, which was a bit of a surprise because we, you know, in all the testing, we hadn't come across that issue. We're still kind of getting to the bottom of it because there's also some heat we've got to think about and plan for come, 2021 now, hopefully. It was hard. It was a rather quiet race course, you know, in midnight in Doha, there wasn't too many people out on the course, unfortunately, but, you know, can't blame them. Other than that, it was that kind of the whole experience. It was my first major championship competing for New Zealand. That was really cool. It was my first, we call them black singlet events. Is the way
basically top tier.
So I think that's just Com Games, World Champs and Olympics. That was my first foray into that level of competition, which I was incredibly proud to be part of. And to perform what I thought was relatively good for my first championship at that level.
Absolutely. I was so stoked to see you and Caden and also Tony Payne get the call up for Thailand. He had some injury problems.
Unfortunately he wasn't able to finish the race. He had some foot issues going in and he struggled with them for quite a while afterwards, unfortunately. But it was very cool because Tony Payne and I, you know, we ran for years together in Auckland, you know, commuting to and from work, and we live around the corner from each other. Yeah. So it was very cool to, you know, go from being commuting buddies, running along Mount Eden Road to running at the World Championships in Doha together. It was a very special moment.
And then we fast forward into 2019 and COVID-19 starts shutting races down left, right and center. But you managed to sneak in the Seville Marathon, which is really one of the last chances really for anyone to do a marathon in the world. So you ran a 2:10.0. Well, I just looked up Athletics New Zealand saying it's 2:10.04. So don't know if that's correct.
To be honest, I don't know who's right.
I imagine one's like a gun time, one's a mat time or something.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. I think Seville Marathon, it potentially was the last big marathon. Because it's a bit of a strange time for the European marathons. For the spring marathons, it's in the middle of winter. It was mid February, whereas, you know, a lot of the big marathons like London, they don't kick off until April, so kind of, you know, further into spring. But part of the reason that my coach Paul Hamblin and I targeted Seville was to get an attempt at a qualifier for the Olympics early in the year, and then we had a backup of London Marathon if things didn't go to plan or I didn't get to the start line healthy. So that was our plan. We didn't kind of want to put all of our eggs into a spring marathon in April, without a backup. But also those April marathons were quite close to the Olympic marathon. It was only May, June, July. Yeah, so it was about 3.5 months turnaround from, let's say, London Marathon to the Olympic Marathon. So, you know, that's fairly tight for any marathoner. So, that's why we targeted as our first choice was Seville. And Seville in the middle of winter is calm. It's consistent. The weather is always sunny, but, you know, always about 10, 11 degrees in the morning. And it was perfect. Yeah. So we had those exact conditions, that we were hoping for.
Man. And it sounds like you just paced it to pretty much to perfection. How did it unfold for you?
So there was actually a couple of European guys, and myself started talking, maybe close to a year ago, about, you know, where we were going to target a Olympic qualifier, because we were all in the same boat, kind of 2:12, 2:13 runners, and we all had to run under the 2:11:30 is the Olympic, the automatic standard. Yeah. So we started talking, and I said, look, you know, I was at Seville last year. I did some pacing for some friends the year before, and I thought it was a great race. Good timing. The conditions were consistent, and so we kind of started spreading the word a little bit about, you know, a group of us were going down to target, because, you know, having a pack all running the same pace and, you know, with the same goal is really beneficial. So word got out a bit more than we realized, and we had there was a fantastic pack. You know, so we probably had about maybe close to 20 guys go out on pace with us.
Awesome. So, yeah, and that pace is around what, 3:05, 3:06 per K, something like that?
Yeah, that's right. So we went through halfway in about 65:25.
Yeah, I've just dug it out to 65:22.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, and that's what we were targeting. We had the race had organized one pacemaker to take us through to about 25 or 30 Ks. But, you know, even without him, it would have been, we had a big enough group, you know, to roll through. So that was amazing. And there was, because we were all targeting exactly, you know, this one quite specific time, it worked out really well for everyone. Then things started to splinter a little bit. But, you know, we still finished with maybe a group of, maybe 8 or 9 guys kind of within about 30 seconds of each other, at the end.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm looking at the results, like Jonathan Mellor from Great Britain, Kevin Seward from Ireland. A bunch of guys from Brazil and Italy, and awesome.
Yeah. So no, the pack we were running with was, it was fantastic. And it's exactly kind of the way we had hoped and planned for.
Nice. So that books your ticket to the Olympics, aside from just needing to get that official tick. What was that feeling like when you knew, like, you've basically all but secured your place for your first Olympic Games?
Yeah, so I'm still that last box to be ticked. But, you know, things now, there'll be a bit of a change with the qualifying period and procedures. I'm relatively confident that time will roll over to the next year, even if they move the qualifying period. So, so still need to be officially selected. And I'll probably be waiting over a year now to find out what other athletes run and, you know, who else from New Zealand hits the standards and then any selections they make. So, yeah, things are a bit more up in the air now as they were a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, no, it was fantastic. It was, it's one of those things where you get a pretty good idea of how you're going, you know, kind of from about 30 Ks. Once I got to about 30, 35 K, I was just, you know, just keep calm and get there and tick the box. You know, it's, it was about, ticking the box and not trying to push the pace, you know, too hard and kind of doing anything too risky. So it was, and it was a little bit the same in Dusseldorf, getting the Doha qualifier. You know, I had a pretty good idea late in the race that we were on track, and I just needed to make sure I was securing it. It was pretty emotional.
I remember 4 years ago you were trying to get that 5K qualifier and put so much work into it, and you got in really great shape and didn't get the qualifier for Rio. So I was so stoked to wake up to that news to see you'd got the standard for Tokyo.
I've tried for a couple of other championships and Olympics and Com Games on the track, which is kind of my background. 5K and 10K running. To be honest, I never imagined the one Olympics I might be heading to would be for the marathon. If you'd told me that as a 22-year-old 1500 meter runner, I probably would have laughed. It is, but I'm really enjoying the transition, into marathoning. It's been, it's such a learning curve, and there's so many, there's just been so much to learn. I thought, well, I've been running for 10, 15 years, you know, this can't be too different, but it really is. And I kind of understand the journey that most marathoners go through. You know, it's such a long build up, to one event, and, you know, you do just get that one shot. So yeah, it's been fantastic, and I've really enjoyed it.
Now, what's next? Obviously, they've postponed Tokyo till 2021. So how do you, and this is, I guess, where the listeners will be like, okay, give us some advice on how to keep trucking without a goal in mind. So what's the sort of plan ahead? How are you tackling the next few weeks? And just take each day as it comes, or are you following some sort of training plan at the moment?
At the moment, running's kind of the only chance I get to leave the house and enjoy some outdoors. So it's quite a key part of my day still. I'm in the same boat as just about everyone else. You know, I don't know what my next race will be at this stage. How restricted training might become. I'm just kind of enjoying being able to run without the pressure of needing to hit workouts and big long runs. I'm just getting out and enjoying it, still getting some good mileage in and laying some foundations for later in the year. Trying to get on top of lots of, well, my home gym is rather basic, but a lot of that type of, you know, that stability work and those small things that often get left behind when you're really busy and training hard and you're tired. I've dropped the mileage back a little bit. I'm still kind of getting back up to mileage since Seville, because that was only 1 month ago now. I'm back to a good level of mileage, but you know, I'm not pushing things. I'm not risking getting hurt, because you know, we're seeing physios is difficult. So I'm going to be away from my usual physio and osteo for quite a while. So, you know, I think just taking care of the body, still getting out and running while we can, because it's probably the best thing and the only form of exercise most people are able to do at the moment.
It's a good time to be a runner. You'd be glad you gave up the football and the tennis while you did back at high school.
I'm kind of expecting it's going to be the jogging boom of 2020.
Totally. Which,
yeah, yep. Hopefully, because, you know, so many people I'm talking to, they're like, oh, I've run five times this week, you know, I've working from home and they've got the time. So, yeah, it's great. But, yeah, I think just don't push things too much. And yeah, but obviously, you know, we do have goals and we're going to want to set them once we have a bit more certainty. So, yeah, laying a good foundation now. But, yeah, I'm just enjoying not needing to really hit hard, long sessions at the moment.
Awesome. Oh, great to catch up. And where can people follow you and sort of track what you're up to? I don't know if you've got a public Instagram or
Instagram's probably the best. I'm not the most active out there, but I think it's Hicks_M on Instagram. So yeah, that's where I usually post about races and yeah, whatever else is going on. So that's probably the best place.
Awesome. Well, thanks heaps, Malcolm. All the best with your running, and we'll be looking forward to seeing some epic results coming out once the world opens back up again.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Hayden, and good luck for the lockdown, and hope you and the family stay safe.
Hello, my fellow runners. I would love to connect with you all online, so please search for Run Tempo Fit on Instagram, Facebook, and Strava, and use the hashtag TempoFitWow to tag your workouts. And remember, during the month of February 2020, New Balance is giving away $150 of vouchers every week to fuel your run. So tag us in at Run Tempo Fit and at New Balance NZ to be in the draw to win. Finally, if you have enjoyed this podcast and you've got value out of this workout, would you mind giving us a little 5-star review through your podcast app and subscribing? That would be a huge help to us. Thank you, everyone. Happy running.